It is good to be able to be with you online this week at St. Alf's. The hope is I'll be able to be with you in person. We wait and see. In the Acts of the Apostles, your major series for this year, we see unfold before us the story of the explosion that took place following the resurrection of Jesus Christ. An explosion in which we see the early church established. Today, we see it exploding to the ends of the earth with Philip and the Ethiopian seeker. As Peter put it earlier this year when we were arranging this visit, 2021 feels like we are re-establishing the church, even more so now as the pandemic continues and we continue to grapple with restrictions and what that means. What does it mean to re-establish the church? What does it look like? Get back to where you were at the beginning of last year? Or does it mean being open to something completely new? Or is it more a reshaping? What does the encounter between Philip and the Ethiopian seeker have to say to us? Firstly, what we're hearing is the Spirit of God instructing Philip where to go and what to do. Philip's going about his business when an angel of the Lord tells him to go to a desert road. Philip gets up and goes without comment. He sees a man in a chariot, an Ethiopian eunuch. Right at the beginning of his gospel, if you remember, St. Luke has John the Baptist quoting Isaiah, "All flesh shall see the salvation of God." Philip encountering the Ethiopian eunuch is exhibit A of this promise being fulfilled. If you read the actual text of Isaiah chapter 52, verse 10, it says, "All the ends of the earth shall see God's salvation." And that's precisely where the Ethiopian comes from as things were viewed in Luke's day. He was from Africa, south of Egypt, which is today part of Sudan, beyond the fringes of the Roman Empire, the ends of the earth, in other words. He was a powerful man, a black man, in a kingdom which was a major power at the time. An important official in charge of all the treasury of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians. The chariot's a sign of his wealth. What we're seeing is the gospel reaching different ethnic groups, different sorts of people. The gospel's for everyone and no one's excluded. Philip sees an Ethiopian eunuch. A eunuch is a boy before puberty who had, at the least, his testicles removed. It was a humiliating and dangerous operation, and many boys didn't survive. The castration means that his body won't produce testosterone, and as a result, his voice won't break. He won't have much body hair or muscle mass. Testosterone also stops men's bones from growing too long. So most eunuchs have very long arms and legs and suffered obesity. In a word, they're horribly disfigured, social outcasts, bound to serve the government of the day. Yet this Ethiopian eunuch is clearly on a spiritual journey, returning from worship in Jerusalem and returning home. The Spirit tells Philip to go up to the chariot, verse 29, which he does, and hears the eunuch reading the prophet Isaiah out loud. So firstly, more than anything else, whatever it feels like getting re-established at St. Alf's, I want to say no need to be anxious. It's about being open to the prompting of the Spirit wherever that leads us. More than that, in what ensues, in what the Spirit prompts Philip to do, we see that it is God's way to come alongside and listen. And so secondly, we hear in this encounter the defining marks of God's love for the world. what will continue to be the defining marks of sharing God's love today, marks that do not change whatever changes around us, however being church might change or feel different. The defining marks are respect, humility, trust. Philip begins with a question, verse 30. He respects where the eunuch is at. Do you understand what you are reading? Philip doesn't barge his way into the chariot and start preaching or go to some other text. Instead, Philip comes alongside and listens. And after listening comes service. How can I help you? What are your needs? Philip's not trying to manipulate the eunuch in any way. And the eunuch, in response to Philip's respectful attitude, invites Philip to sit beside him. He invites Philip in. An attitude of respect can and will lead to profound conversation. Conversation based on trust, and that will lead to the gospel. We come to the haunting Isaiah text that the eunuch is reading, verse 32. He was led like a sheep to the slaughter, and as a lamb before its shearer is silent, so he did not open his mouth. In his humiliation, he was deprived of justice. Who can speak of his descendants? For his life was taken from the earth. The eunuch is reading about a man who suffered terribly, a man who was like a sheep about to be slaughtered, who did not open his mouth, a man who was humiliated, denied justice, a man with no descendants, in other words, a man just like a eunuch. Eunuchs were castrated without their consent. It was, as I said, a humiliating, degrading, unjust practice. A eunuch was a man with no descendants whose reproductive life and possibility for marital life was taken away. They were like lambs to a slaughter. The Ethiopian eunuch identifies powerfully with the suffering man described in Isaiah. So this raises his curiosity. Who was Isaiah talking about? Himself or someone else? Who could this person be whom I identify with? Surely not a powerful God. Surely no one worships a humiliated God. And Philip, starting with this scripture, tells the eunuch the good news about Jesus. As I said, the eunuch scripture, not a favourite one of Philip's, or an easy passage about God's love for everyone, but with a piece of ancient, haunting poetry. Philip tells the eunuch about Jesus, the lamb who was slain. Can you imagine the astonishment on the Ethiopian's face when he's told that the text is talking about Jesus, who suffered like a eunuch, that Jesus lived a life of integrity and love and care, and yet was viciously murdered without a fair trial? The eunuch probably saw himself in the story of Isaiah, but imagine his surprise when he saw Jesus in his story, in all its suffering and heartache. The eunuch knew all about power and influence and wealth. As I said, he was a government heavyweight, a wealthy man who had his own chariot and Isaiah scroll. Surely he could have related to a God who rules the world in absolute power, a God unchallenged in might. Wouldn't he have expected to read about a God who rules the world without, like a king, without rivals? But that's not the God found in God's story in the Gospels, in the Old or New Testaments. That's not the Lamb who was slain, who took away the sin of the world, the Lamb who kept silent and refused to defend himself. The eunuch, like us, knows both power and powerlessness, influence and injustice, wealth and degradation. But what is God like? In God's story, the eunuch finds a God who freely gives up his power and influence and wealth to suffer and die in perfect love for all humanity. And we find that humility expressed in the lives of Philip and the eunuch. As the story continues, as they were going along the road, they came to some water and the eunuch asked yet another question. Look, here's some water. What's to stop me from being baptized? Verse 37. The eunuch orders the chariot to stop and Philip and the eunuch both show humility in entering the waters together. There's three things Philip and the eunuch do together. It's really a beautifully told story, this. They travel together along the road. They go down together into the water. They come up together from the water. For the briefest of moments, two lives align perfectly. They synchronize. They pass through the waters of baptism together. The eunuch's journey is never disrespected, but it's a journey like no other. For he arose from the water, a new creation. He now belongs to Jesus. So respect doesn't mean keeping a permanently polite distance. In fact, once the conversation is joined, it'd be disrespectful. It would have been disrespectful of Philip not to talk about Jesus, let alone refuse baptism. The story ends, verse 39, when they come out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord suddenly took Philip away, hijacked Philip, in other words, and the eunuch never saw him again, but went on his way home rejoicing. The Spirit sends Philip at just the right time when the eunuch was asking deep questions. Philip, for only a brief period, joins the eunuch's journey, enters his chariot, listens to his story, reads his text, answers his theological questions, baptizes at his request, and then leaves him be, never to see him again. Respect, humility, and trust. This story is soaked in trust. Philip trusts the Spirit when he's told to go to a desert road. The Spirit trusts Philip to be respectful, to listen, to wait. The eunuch trusts Philip, and so invites him into his space, the chariot. There's no anxiety here. It's being part of the spread, the explosion of the gospel, on the basis that God's love and grace have prepared the way. It's trusting God to be creating opportunities to turn a road trip into a redemptive journey. Trusting God to turn the crisis we're experiencing, into an opportunity as people seek comfort and meaning in something greater than themselves and what they can see. Most remarkably, the gospel is spread through God relying on the mutual trust between the evangelist, the sharer of the good news, and the seeker. The eunuch asks, "What's to stop me from being baptized?" Well, the only person who at that point could stop the eunuch, who was it? Philip. The eunuch entrusts his heart's turning toward God to Philip, and Philip trusts the authenticity of the eunuch. We can be so anxious about mission, about reaching others. You know, who are the Ethiopian eunuchs in our neighborhood? How will we recognize them? Will they reject God? But Philip did not know where the eunuch was, who the eunuch was, or anything about the eunuch's openness to meeting Jesus. We're not to be anxious about the where or who or how or why. We're simply to be attentive to the Spirit's guidance, ready to join another's journey in humble service, to witness to Jesus, to be a midwife, in other words, for newborn baptismal faith. Respect, humility, trust, these are the defining marks of God's love for our world. A love we celebrate as we gather, online or in person. Marks that are to define us today as we play our part, sharing that same love, whatever the future holds.